School PR professionals spend a few weeks a year participating in professional development and networking, if they're lucky. We use this time to connect through conversation and shared experiences. Conversation is one of the best parts of our jobs, but then we go back to our daily work and the time for connection begins to wear off.
Welcome to School PR Happy Hour. During our time together, our goal is to continue a sense of collaboration and shared conversation throughout the whole year.
We are a community of communicators that lean on each other in hard times and times of celebration and learn from each other regularly.
This podcast gives us the chance to get to know each other better by sharing our passions about furthering education one story at a time.
Whether you are listening on your morning commute or winding down after work, we are so glad you're here and look forward to learning alongside you today.
What's up, everybody, and welcome into another episode of School PR Happy Hour. My name's Justin Deering, and I'm a communication strategist for CISO Communications. If you're listening to this on drop day, May 17th, you may notice we're a couple days late. Yeah, we usually release on the 15th or the 1st of the month, but this time we knew about this research project. We wanted to take some time to digest it and have a really quality conversation, so we apologize for being a couple days late. Today, we're going to bring in Brittany Kyle from School CEO to talk about their new release of research that they did on school communications and superintendents and kind of the seat at the table conversation of, are you a trusted advisor? Are you heard? Are you seen? How does that affect your work? How does that affect burnout? I hope you enjoy this conversation. I found it as very inspiring as someone who loves having data at my fingertips to help back up the work that I'm doing. So I hope you enjoy this. We're glad you're here. Thanks for learning with us today.
Hi, this is Dr. Jill at Class Intercom, and we're honored to once again be the official sponsor of School PR Happy Hour. I spent 30 years in education as a teacher and administrator, so I know the challenges schools face when it comes to social media. Class Intercom makes approvals, moderation, analytics, and archival easy. With our support, schools and districts are able to champion student voice and tell impactful stories that engage their communities. To learn more, contact me or the rest of our team at classintercom.com.
All right, well, welcome in, Brittany. I'm excited for today's conversation. I'm excited to dive into this research that you've released on, you know, a seat at the table for communications folks. So before we get into it, we always like to learn more about our guest. In the pre-show when we were just chatting, you mentioned you were a teacher. So I'd love to hear your story through education, kind of what landed you at School CEO and where you're at, and then talk a little bit about School CEO and kind of how they work and what y'all are doing there.
Sure. So my name is Brittany Kyle, and I am the Research and External Relations Manager for School CEO. Before this, though, before the 3 years that I've gotten to spend here, I was a teacher for about a decade. So I taught high school special education in Washington, D.C., in Little Rock, Arkansas. I loved it. I loved every year I was in the classroom was incredible. I actually finished that part of my teaching career. Maybe I'll go back to the classroom. I don't know. In a facility for students with complex needs in Little Rock, Arkansas. So I actually taught through the pandemic because my students, you know, were in a facility. They were not at home. And so it made sense that their teachers be with them too. And so I had a very unique sort of teaching experience during the pandemic of being with my kids through this very, you know, scary and difficult time. You know, they didn't get to see their parents. And so it was a really, you know, interesting and like beautiful time to be a teacher. About 4 years ago, I had a baby. And I can say about, because she's about to have a birthday. And after having my own kid, I started to, you know, want to explore something that could keep me home a little bit more. Teaching, you know, during the pandemic was really awesome in a lot of ways. I got to have some incredible moments with my kids, but it was also pretty stressful. And so before I was a teacher, I actually worked in nonprofit communications. And I had continued some web writing, you know, just sort of as my teacher side gig throughout the years. And so when I saw an education journalist position come up, I was like, man, this would be incredible. I get to talk about teaching. I get to talk about kids. I get to talk about education. And yet I may have a little bit more flexibility for my family. So I went for it, loved it. I had gotten my graduate degree a couple of years ago, and I quickly found myself loving getting to use those research skills again. And so I've been doing research for School CEO ever since. I've been there just over 3 years. It's incredible. And a little bit about the magazine as a whole. So School CEO is a research and perspectives magazine primarily for superintendents, but as we've sort of honed our niche over the years with school communication, we find ourselves like working more and more with school communications pros, school comms pros, principals, and other school leaders too. You know, School CEO started because our parent company, Aptigy, really wanted to become sort of a leader in the conversation around school communications and school leadership for superintendents. And Aptigy takes these kinds of things very seriously. And my boss likes to joke that they did the most expensive version of this. They created a print magazine with a totally independent team. So we're not a part of sales. We're not anything like that. We are just looking for the very best ideas in K-12 education and school communication.
Well, I will tell you, we at CISO, we have quite a few clients that work with Aptigy, so we've had the opportunity to meet Tyler and a lot of the people that work over there, and it's a great group of people. Like, it's fun. We always get together and kind of cut it up a little bit whenever we have new clients. Like, oh, look, it's you again. Like, we know each other. Like, we worked enough together. So I do know when I was back in my last district, and it's a district you're partnered with now. I think they're actually featured in the magazine that just came out. It used to be the school CEO would land, we'd get a couple copies, and it would come out to the department, it'd be passed out, and it was literally an assignment. Dive in and figure out what we need to take from this one, and let's work it into our day-to-day. And we would take it, we would read through it, and we'd come together for a meeting, and the first half of the meeting would be chopping up school CEO and seeing if there's things we can pull from it. So it's a very valuable resource for school comms folks. I know it's like you said, it's geared towards superintendents, but you can tell as it's evolved that there's more comms in there, and there's so much in there that if you aren't getting it and you aren't seeing it, you need to get a hold of it and read it, because there's a lot of really good stuff in there. So yeah, y'all are doing a great job.
Thank you. And if you are a school comms person, or anyone really, and this sounds like a good resource for you, email me. I'll make sure you're on our list. Like, we have a lot of comms directors come up to us at conferences and things like that. And, you know, they'll say something like, oh, I love reading your magazine. Sometimes my superintendent just takes so long, though. And I'm like, let me get you your own. So that's fine, too.
Awesome. Well, one of the things that was recently released is, like we mentioned in the intro, this amazing research on the relationship between superintendents and school comms. We're in year 5 of School PR Happy Hour, and I can guarantee you that every season, at some point in the season, and it's already come up this season, so this is a good, you know, follow-up to what we talked about having that seat at the table, being heard, having your voice heard, when you're being that trusted counselor, the advisor that you're supposed to be, and really having a voice and being there to help. My personal journey, I've talked about on the show before, is I went from specialist to assistant director to director, and it felt like it took me quite a few years to get to the point where I was heard. I may not have been in the cabinet meetings at first, but once I got to a point that, hey, we're thinking about doing this, what's the response going to be from communications? What should we expect from our audience? You know the community better than anybody. Is this really going to light a fire under them? So that is the ultimate goal for school comms folks, is to be trusted at that table. I work with some new clients in our business that are first years, and they're like, I just said that. I said the same thing a couple weeks ago. They didn't hear it. I said, give it time. It'll happen. So this research, you partnered with INSPRA. You know, we're coming up on Seattle in a couple months, so it's exciting. This is a good lead into Seattle. I'll be in Seattle. Talk to me just kind of like, how did this come up? Where did this idea come from? Was it INSPR? Was it you guys? Was it dinner at a conference? And you're like, hey, what if we did this? Like, that's how things work.
So this is my 5th research study for School CEO. I have, and they did some research before I worked there too. So we've surveyed teachers before, we've surveyed superintendents, and to a limited degree, we've surveyed school staff in general, and we surveyed parents. But what we had never done was focus solely on school communicators. And this is something that I've been sort of mulling over. Oh, we also surveyed principals. That I've been mulling over for maybe even a couple of years, like really wanting to target talking about school communicators. At the same time, we've been building this like really like beautiful relationship with all of the work that INSPRA does. INSPRA does incredible work. It does incredible support for school communicators. I'm sure your audience knows all about this, but we've just been again and again impressed by, you know, all of the thoughtful work that they put into every single session they have, every single bit of information that they put out is, you know, so You know, in thinking about that, I started, reading their research very carefully and keeping up to date, because I wanted to work with school communicators, but not in a way that overlapped any of INSPIRE's work. And so what we realized was that we could really focus on the relationship between communications directors and their superintendents. And I should say, I keep using the term communications directors, I'm being kind of inclusive here, but communications professionals as a whole and their relationship with their superintendents and other leaders. And then because superintendents are really where school CEO has, you know, has shined, we've worked a lot with superintendents. And yet that relationship is just critical to, you know, a strong communications program as a whole. So we approached INSPIRE and we're like, we don't know what this partnership looks like. We have no idea. We've never done anything like this before, but we have a crazy idea. And INSPIRE, we talked to Barbara Hunter. She was super enthusiastic. She was like, we love research. You love research. Let's do this together. And so that was, it was as simple as that. You know, we hashed out an agreement. They had, you know, INSPIRE has a really good member network that we wanted to be able to include in our research study. And we have a really strong research team and a great publication to house the research. And we're actually going to be co-presenting with INSPIRE in Seattle on this research. So it'll be me, my editor, Melissa, and then Alyssa Turbury from INSPIRE. So feel free to come to our session.
We will have to just meet up and high five each other and meet in real life. So that'll be fun. So when you were diving into this, I mean, I've read through this, I'm looking at it. It's such a great sample size of communicators, and it's such a wide range of folks from first years to 15 years. I mean, you've got all sorts of experience and in between. And, you know, the thing that, you know, and I knew this, most school comms people know this, a lot of us are working by ourselves. A lot of us are one person teams. I have somehow avoided being a one person team in my multiple stops. And I work with a lot of one person teams now. And I'm like, you know what? You're killing it. I don't know how you're doing it, but you're doing it. What are some of the biggest surprises that jumped out when it comes just to communications folks or that relationship? What are some of those, like, as you're doing the research, those aha moments of, yeah, I didn't expect to see that to happen?
So first, I want to give communicators a giant, giant shout out. Because of all of my surveys that I've done, of all of the different populations we've surveyed, the school communicators were by far the most responsive and the most in-depth. So with teachers and with principals, we've had to really, you know, like, come on, please take our survey, please take our survey. Communicators were, the first time we sent the email, they were like, yes, done. Thank you for studying us. We need more research about school communication. And in the comments, I had people format comments in a way that I know they were copying, pasting from Google Docs. You know, I shouldn't be surprised because school communicators are comprehensive in general, but I felt like every question, you know, everyone put so much thought into. And when I've surveyed other populations before, you know, sometimes you can scroll through the open responses and it can be not necessarily a challenge, but definitely an Easter egg hunt to find the kind of great nugget that you want to pull out that, you know, aligns to what you're seeing in the data. But almost every single comment from every single person was thoughtful and thorough and, you know, challenged, you know, whatever we were trying to ask. And I thought that was just so beautiful. That was probably my first surprise. My second surprise was that the results just kind of flooded in. So I work with a statistician. Her name is Abigail Franco. She's incredible. And typically Abby and I, you know, we talk a lot about how do we get the survey out to more people. We're always trying to push. And that didn't happen at all. You know, as soon as we sent things out, we would get hundreds of responses. And we ended up getting exactly 600 responses. It was a total coincidence. We did not cut the survey off. That was our sort of planned cutoff time, and it just, you know, happened that way. But no, in general, it was incredible. And thinking about the actual research itself, you know, there were two big surprises for me. First, I do talk to a lot of school communicators who are one-person shops, but I don't know why, but seeing that 47% exactly, you know, nearly half of school communicators are working by themselves just really made me reassess, you know, how I think about just how much work is being produced by school communications professionals as a whole. Like, there's just an incredible volume of campaigns and content, and yet most of it is coming from people who are working by themselves.
Right.
And that, you know, that was striking to me, and also just sort of challenged the way that I think our team on SchoolCEO, like, thinks about supporting them. And then the second thing that was really surprising for me, and maybe this was surprising for you too, is, you know, when we launched this study, we called it a seat at the table, because we wanted to explore the relationship between superintendents and communications professionals and whether or not communications professionals had access to the spaces where executive decision is being made. And I was surprised by how many, you know, comms professionals reported that they did have access. And, you know, later in the research, we kind of dig into some nuance around that, you know, about how just having access to a seat at the table doesn't necessarily, you know, it's not a checkbox that can be done. Like, the, you know, it is a first step, but in general, communications professionals were pretty positive about their relationships with their superintendents and feeling like they were in the room, you know, when strategic decisions are being made.
Well, I will say that I'm not surprised that school comms folks were the most responsive, seeing as how we're the survey people usually in districts and we're begging folks, hey, there's a survey about us. Yeah, let's talk about ourselves. And I think that that jumped out of the page, like the amount of folks that felt like they had a seat, for it to only be like roughly 35 to 36 at 36% that said, nope, I don't have that seat at all. It's interesting that I would have thought that had been a little different. Honestly, I thought it'd be a little higher. That, you know, I'm just the worker bee. I'm just the doer. I'm not the seat at the table person. But then I think back to, you know, I've always had really good relationships with my superintendents. When I was just a video guy in my first district, superintendent. It was a district I went to school in, so superintendent knew me from when I was a student. So that was awkward as it was. He was like my principal at one point. But he knew me. He trusted me. He would never come and say, Justin, what do you think about this crisis? It was, Justin, is a podcast a video a better idea or a video a better idea? And I felt that I was trusted in my silo.
Mm-hmm.
And I, the more I saw my bosses and the people above me and those people on cabinet bringing the strategy stuff in, that's when I was like kind of geeked out a little bit. And I was like, I want to learn that stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think some of our younger, less experienced professionals are learning, man, I got to dive into that to earn that seat. The seat isn't given. Unfortunately, it's not like, oh, you're here. That's great. Have a seat. You got to prove yourself. And that's tough because we are in a shift, in my opinion, in leadership when it comes to schools. The pandemic kind of knocked us out a little bit to where superintendents retired, comms people retired. We're filling spots with folks that are maybe a little less experienced. And there's a little bit of a leadership gap there. So having the seat at the table is great, but the ultimate goal, like we said earlier, is being heard, trusted, counseled with, and being able to give counsel and them hear that. So I think it's great that this many folks have great relationships with their superintendents or in the rooms when they're talking. It's just, I think that there are folks that want that real bad. And I work with a couple of them. They're like, I really want to be in there when they're making this decision. It would make our lives easier. I think I can avoid some roadblocks and some hiccups and some fires. But keep working, keep doing your thing, keep proving yourself, and it'll happen. So just keep working. What are your thoughts on, you know, one of the, I think I put it in our notes when I sent it to you yesterday, that this is something that we're seeing more, especially down here in Texas. Superintendents are being pulled in all different directions. And how accessible is a superintendent? You know, I've been blessed to work with superintendents. They're like, here's my cell phone, call me. I mean, I haven't worked with a superintendent one-on-one in a district in 2.5 years, but my old superintendent, I can still text him and ask him questions and he'll give me an answer. How do you feel about like that question, that research popping about how accessible they were? Over half of them said extremely accessible. Like, based on what you read, and maybe if it was, and I didn't get to see the survey, so I don't know if this was more of an open-ended, if there was opportunity for that. There's about 10% that are like, basically not at all. Like, I have no access to him whatsoever or her whatsoever. What kind of jumped out on that information?
So one thing that really surprised me, and this is going back to the seat at the table, but the comms professionals who were less likely to have a seat at the table were more likely to work in smaller districts. And that totally seems contradictory to me. Like, if you're in a small district, you know, small central office, it should be easy. But, you know, as our team was talking, and when we were talking with some of the, you know, communications professionals that we partnered with this on, you know, it does seem like in districts where the communications, you know, director or specialist job is fairly new, the executive staff doesn't know how to bring them in on conversations. They don't know what they do. And that can definitely, you know, hinder their work. We go into this later in the survey. And I think this is something that if you are a communications professional and you don't have a seat at the table, this is something that, you know, that is something you should consider and something that you should talk with your superintendent about. You know, communications professionals who didn't have a seat at the table were less likely to feel like they spent more of their time working strategically.
That was the next thing I have circled. So we'll yeah. circle back to that one.
And then the thing about access too is, you know, thinking about some of the open response answers. A lot of, you know, professionals like really praise their superintendent's like attentiveness and, you know, ability to be reached. You know, whether or not those conversations are happening at a strategic level, I think is something else. And something that's maybe more, you know, like on an individual basis, like, yes, I can talk to my superintendent. My superintendent knows when my birthday is, you know, but do we regularly talk about our strategic plan? Or is that something that we're like, all right, we did that last year. I can't wait to, you know, circle back in 4 years.
Right.
And I, you know, I do think that there's some nuance to access that, you know, you can't just have access. You also have to use the access to, you know, make things happen, especially strategically. And, you know, that's something that has to happen on, you know, in that relationship.
I love that. And I'm going to ask you, I'm going to pull a Brené Brown here and I'm going to have you say that again.
Okay.
You can't just have access. Say that again.
Okay. Let me try to remember it. You have to, you know, you can't just have access. You have to use access to do what really matters in your work.
Yes,
did that
absolutely.
Accomplish it? Okay.
That's perfect. Yeah. Brené Brown's been doing this new thing on our podcast where she hears somebody, she says, say that again. And I'm like, if I'm the person, I'm like, I don't even know if I remember what I just said. But yeah,
But yeah, she's incredible. So
I think that's huge. You can't just have access. Yes, I can text my superintendent and say, what's up? You want to go have lunch or whatever? Using the access for a strategic purpose is our ultimate role in our job. You mentioned the folks that said, you know, what I want to do the most is this, but what I'm doing the most is this, and it's not strategic, it's not aligning. The chart right in the middle of this that says, which of the following tasks take up most of the time in your day? And the last thing listed is building long-term strategy. And then you go to the next column, which of the following tasks do you believe is most important? Number one is building long-term strategy. This will lead into the next section of our conversation about proactive versus reactive, because that jumped off the page as a person who is embedded in quite a few districts working in a consulting role. That is the biggest thing right now, I think, across our team we're saying is we've got to be proactive. We can't be reactive. Here in Texas, we are in the middle of the big school choice boom, the vouchers mm-hmm. system that could be passed down here, and schools are getting to the point, they're like, we're full-blown marketing department now. Like, we have to mm-hmm. sell ourselves because you have choices. And you have districts that are very reactive. Ooh, I saw this happen in the next district over to try to steal our kids. We need lack of better terminology, we need to clap back at them. I had a district mm-hmm. say, we need to clap back at these folks. And I was like, first off, great slang. Second off, we should have clapped first. That's mm-hmm. what we So there's a lot of reactive versus proactive. But when we come back to this, building long-term strategy is what we want to do most. But for the most part, it's what we have the least amount of time for. That has to be... that's where that access has to be used in a certain way. So there is, this all plays together. And I don't know if you have any thoughts you want to add in about that, but the building of the long-term strategy makes all the other things on this list happen in a different flow.
Yes. You know, this was, you know, when you're a researcher, you're looking for these like points of conflict. And I think this was one of the biggest points of conflict of our research was where school communicators are spending their time, which is, you know, on external communications, which they're like, yay, this is important. But also on social media, which I had, you know, so many communications professionals tell me in the comments, social media eats too much of my time. I spend too much of my time editing videos, you know, responding to comments, creating content. It is not what I should be doing, but I've fallen into a pattern or expectations or something so that I have to do this. And, you know, I had so many respondents like really lament that they didn't have time to think about external strategy or sorry, long-term strategy until a bond came up or until, you know, a superintendent turnover happened. And I think that, you know, leads to a big sense of frustration And it also makes, like you said, everything else on this list harder because you're not working within a framework of long-term strategy. And you know, most of the respondents in our survey were really self-aware about this. They're like, I know I should be spending more time doing this. I just don't know how. And then the second thing that I think relates back to the accessibility and respect is, you know, communications professionals felt very like respected and included by their superintendent. But that sense of understanding really dropped off when it came to principals and teachers and other staff. So, you know, when I think about the ability to work strategically, you can't just have access to your superintendent. If your superintendent, you know, doesn't have like a mind map of what's happening all through the district, you also have to, you know, have a good working relationship with the people in the buildings, because that's where the content comes from. That's where the stories that you're able to fold into that bigger narrative come from. And something that, you know, kind of surprised me was that that it was just, I don't want to say negative, but that it was just much more challenging for communications professionals to work with principals. And, you know, some of them had things in the comments where like, you know, my superintendent meets with me a lot, but he never talks about what I do to other, you know, executives in the campus. And so they, you know, don't really know what I should be spending my time on. They don't know to include me. And also that like people at the building level never think to include me until it's already a roaring fire.
Right. So yes, I live, my wife is an assistant principal, and she's lived with a communications person since the day we got married. Like, I've been doing this since the day we got married. And there's even times, and I'm friends with the people that work in communications in her district and her last district, where she was just like, I need this. I was like, did you, like, this happened. Okay, did you call? That's huge. Shoot mm-hmm. a text message, shoot a like, oh, well, they don't have time to come cover this. No, that's their job. Like,
and that's what they want to do.
That is what they enjoy doing. So I think that there's a lot there in working with principals. And now that I have this is her second year as an assistant principal. She's not running a campus yet, but she's the co-mayor of a small town, basically, because it's over 1,000 kids. They are busy. They mm-hmm. are so busy. So I get it. I understand. Hey, I'd love to. If I was a principal, I'd love to have you at my campus telling the story every day. I just am too busy with all these other things. So it's both ways. Yes, communications folks, you need to get in front of them, but also realize that their calendar is nuts. It's crazy. Yeah. So one tip that I do give some new folks that are trying to build those relationships, if you have 10 campuses, schedule every Thursday if you can to be on a different campus and spend the whole day there. And then when you get there, immediately, like, let the principal know, hey, let your staff know I'm coming. This is y'all's Thursday. I'm going to be there. I'm gathering stories. I just want to meet people. I just want to talk to folks. But before you leave that day, post 3 times a social media of something you saw on the campus. And those teachers are going to start trusting you. The principal's going to start, oh, this person really is trying to tell our story. We need to share with it. And I have a friend who is second year in communications. He left the classroom and he started doing that 2 months ago. And he texted me, he said, Justin, I've never had so much stuff to cover because they've seen me 4 times. And because he's got 5 campuses, so he's been through the campuses twice now. He's like, every day I'm getting text messages and emails with pictures and they're writing captions for me. That makes your life 1,000 times easier. And now you take that tactical work and now you start relating it back to the strategy behind it. And okay, our strategy here is going to be about good news and this and that. I was lucky enough to work with a boss who, anytime someone asked us something, her response was, show me where that lines up with the strategic plan.
Mm-hmm.
If we could show it, we're doing it. If we couldn't show it, we're teaching them how to do it themselves. So being the video person, hey, we want to do this cool lip dub. Okay, show me in this document where that lines up with our strategic plan. Okay, it's not, lip dubs aren't in there. Sorry, unfortunately. So we're going to move on, but let me help you. And if I can come help you, I will. But let me teach you how to tell your own story, how you want to tell it. And that builds trust because it shows that you're putting the district priority and strategy first, but you're still supporting in a way to tell their story. So there's a lot of ways to take strategy of what you're working on from last to first by simply asking the question of where does this land in this? And that mm-hmm. forces the conversation. So I think that there are this research gives backbones to school communicators. And I love that. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing that I think I took away from it was anybody can use this piece in a conversation that's saying, hey, we need to be more strategic. Hey, we need to be more proactive. Hey, I need to be sitting in here and keeping the fires from starting, because if I'm not putting out a fire, I'm preventing a fire. I have more time to do all these other things. So I think you've put together a solid amount, a solid piece of research that really helps school PR folks and helps them make their job easier, more strategic. And honestly, I'll say it, probably more fun, because they get to do the stuff they want to do.
Hi friends, this is Kara Zachney and I'm a design specialist for CISO Communications. We are so excited to be a part of the School PR Happy Hour family, and we hope you learn as much from this show as we do. My role at CISO is to help our clients with their visual presence. It doesn't matter if we're working on a print mailer for an enrollment marketing campaign, custom animations for a referendum video, elements to help your website pop, or even creating a completely new visual brand for your favorite school PR podcast. We love working through the creative process and making your brand stand out. We have a talented team of creative pros who are eager to walk alongside you and help you in any way possible. At CISO Communications, we partner with districts to think about their communications strategically. If your school or district is interested in learning more about how we can work together, we would love to connect with you. CISO Communications is a division of CISO, which stands for Center for Effective School Operations, which also supports schools with transportation, HR, finance, and technology. Visit thecso.com and connect with us today. And be sure to follow us on our social channels at CISOComs. Let us help you rethink possible.
So what is your thoughts on proactive versus reactive? Because we kind of talked a little bit about that, about, you know, you're busy putting out the wildfire instead of preventing the wildfire. What are your thoughts from the research that you took on the way folks feel, because it's pretty even on the graph here. It's pretty, similar. You got your far right, your far left, and then you've got everybody in between like, yeah, we're kind of doing it. But what's your thoughts on the research there?
You know, so I was a little bit surprised because, you know, in thinking about the first chart where we talked about how, you know, communications professionals are spending their time, you know, their satisfaction with how they're spending their time is a lot more varied. You know, like you said, like, I think it's like 46 and 54. Like, we asked the question, the majority of your time is spent focusing on what you consider to be the most important elements of your role. Ideally, like, I would love for that to be 80-20 or, you know, 90-10. So there's definitely like a lot of, you know, room for growth there. But I think that this does go back to, you know, the general dissatisfaction with having to like constantly put out fires. I was surprised by three things, and these were really cropped up in the open responses. You know, communications professionals are just spending way too much time on social media. And I'm not saying this, you know, as a like social media expert, this is coming from them. They feel like they're spending too much time, you know, monitoring the minutiae. Right. Rather than getting to, you know, have a bird's eye view of what's going on. The second thing is like, when you don't have a seat at the table, that means you're typically brought in at the end to, you know, build the plane as you're flying it, as one communications professional said, or put out a fire that you could have, you know, made sure it didn't happen in the first place. And so that leads to a sense of dissatisfaction. And then I was also a bit surprised that FOIA requests were referenced so often. And so I don't know if this is happening in Texas right now, but we had probably, you know, dozens of communications professionals like talk about how much time they spent answering FOIA requests and how that is not something that they can deprioritize because they have to do it. And yet it doesn't fold into, you know, nearly any of their other work. It's just a long, tedious task that has to be done.
100%. I think that the pandemic and the resulting things that have happened across the country after the pandemic, I know personally in our district, both the districts I worked at as the pandemic happened and then post pandemic, one of our districts, we saw a 500% increase in open records requests. And we were already doing about 100 a year. So now we're up to like 500 to 600 a year. The second district, it was so bad. And it's not bad. It was, I mean, people deserve the information if they ask for it. It was so numerous. It was so big. People wanting to know these things that we went out and we hired somebody and that was their job because there was no way it could keep landing on the director of communications if we were going to continue to communicate. So we went out and filled a position that was required. That was their 90% of their job was that, 10% was help when you can in communications. So that's been huge here, and it's everywhere. We spend a lot of time training clients, especially our first year folks that we have, because they're like, I've never seen this before. I've never dealt with this before. And now am I not only dealing with one or two, now it's jumped to 10 a week. Mm-hmm. And how am I supposed to do all this other stuff? So it is, that is a big thing that really is taking folks out of what they want to do. So being creative and strategic as a department, money's tight everywhere. Money's very tight in Texas. It's hard to find a new person to come do just that because the budgets, but being creative of how you approach that and being efficient with how you approach that, using the programs that are out there to help and things like that. That I had never dealt with open records until the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. And it was a game changer once it hit, and people were really wanting information. It took up one person on our team. We just quit seeing her. Like, we were like, all right, it was fun. You worked with us for a while, and now you're with the lawyers all the time. So that's definitely impeaching on it. I think that just the constant, like you said, social media, being on social media and battling the battles there. I think it's about time as a whole for us to look at the true ROI on social media and see if we're investing way too much time into not a dying audience, but a very, very different audience than it was 5 years ago. So yeah, there's a lot of additional research on that kind of thing that I think is kind of the next step for school folks. And that's part of a little bit of what I did in my APR group. So I'm starting to learn a little bit about that, but I think there is a need to kind of investigate if we're spending 60% of our time on social media, managing fires, putting out content, telling good stories, all the things we do there, are we really getting a return that's worth the 60% of time? And that's the next step for a lot of folks, I think, is really investigating that.
Yeah, and it requires so much constant learning too. We're seeing this on our own team as well, where, you know, social media, like, you're constantly like learning what's up with the algorithm, what is the algorithm like, and yet our newsletters are consistent and growing, and, you know, we don't have to learn what new trends are going on for our newsletters, and yet they remain popular.
Right.
And when I think about schools, like how they spend their time, like, you know, that's definitely worth investigating. Interesting research. Maybe I want to do it.
I think that, and one thing is, I do think that a lot of, this is kind of getting off the seat of the table talk, but whatever. I told you that would happen when we started. We just get into something. I think with social media, we've all been, for the most part, doing social media the same for a long time. You know, and it, you know, Reels and TikTok and all these things pop up, and we pivot and learn those. But for the most part, I really do feel like the school PR world's social media presence has stayed pretty consistent. I asked a question in a school PR group on Facebook about video metrics and if people were seeing less engagement, and everybody's like, oh yeah, it's gone way down. Videos are going way down. And one person chimed in and said, it's probably because we need to have a conversation of how do you share videos or how do you share content in general on an election year? Mm-hmm. And I hadn't even thought of that. Like, that's just a complete pivot. So it's the thought is, you know, this election's probably not going to be the best thing on social media for the next 6 to 8 months. Mm-hmm. So are people going to be avoiding their news feed to not see what people are saying? So maybe it's now we need to take everything to short form and have 15-second blast that gets people attention with a call to action to visit a website or sign up for a newsletter. Our newsletters we're sending out in districts are getting 60 to 80% open rates. That's wild. That shouldn't be that high, but our social media engagement has just fallen out. So really stepping back and assessing what the response is and what that ROI is on all the time you're spending doing it is something that may be a summer project for everybody. Because, you know, during the summer, you're not busy at all, right? I mean, that's a joke. So to kind of land the plane here, at the end of this research, you shared some takeaways from the research for superintendents, but also for school comms. We do have a few superintendents that listen. They let us know. But for the most part, we are school comms strong, school PR happy hour. What are the takeaways that you, from your research, that you kind of said, this is what the school comms person needs to know from this group?
Sure. So I have three. The first is, if you're not being given a seat at the table, like, you can use this data to advocate for it. You know, this isn't just a matter of you know, personnel, or I don't, you know, the superintendent saying, I don't want you to get stressed, or I don't want to waste your time. The data shows that, you know, communications professionals being in the room where decisions are made helps them be more strategic. It also, you know, makes them spend less time working on things that aren't important. And I, in general, like, they're also less burned out. So this isn't just, you know, this isn't just, I'd like to be, you know, have a seat at the table because it's important, or because I want to, or because I want to learn. It is best for the district, for the communications professionals, to have a seat at the table. And I think this is especially true for early career communications professionals, because they're one of the groups that are most likely not to have a seat at the table. But you can't be expected to learn and think more strategically if you aren't, you know, having access to the spaces where strategy is happening. And then the second thing is to get involved with communities of support. Being a school communicator, unfortunately, is a high burnout career. You know, I think a lot of careers right now are dealing with burnout. And we did have some communications professionals in our survey talk about how the general conversation around school burnout has been only about teachers, or maybe nurses and administrators as well, but rarely about school communicators, who have a lot of things that make their jobs harder and more susceptible to burnout, like not being able to turn off, not being able to take long vacations, and also not being able to have a, you know, large amount of decision about how you spend your time. I was really surprised in a negative way that 77% of our respondents said that they were at least sometimes burned out, and 37% said that they were always or often burned out. That's huge.
That's big.
And if that is you, and I've heard this in some emails since we released the research, know that you're not alone. You know, this is something that's affecting the entire career, you know, the entire workforce of school communicators. And that's definitely something that INSPRA is really, you know, well positioned and very good at facilitating those communities of support. But also know that this is a conversation that you can have with your superintendent as well. It's not just you.
I do think that one thing, and, you know, I think that this, you brought up that bringing up burnout is a total topic for an entire show, honestly, because it is. It's so prevalent right now that I think back to my early days in school PR after I left the classroom, and it felt like maybe once every couple months we were doing okay, we've got a crisis, everybody in here. But now it feels like we're jumping from crisis to crisis to crisis, and there's no recovery time between those crises. And whether it's, you know, as simple as gross as this is, a bed bugs infestation in a school, that's a crisis. Yeah. And then there's the other end that we don't have to talk about. Everybody knows the worst thing that could happen at a school district, but there's always another fire to put out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've talked about this on the show before, that when you go through a crisis, there is a period of time afterwards, because you've been heightened for so long that you need to walk away and be able to come down. I have friends that if there's a major crisis, they take 3 days off after it. And once it's completely calmed down, to completely unplug so they can recenter and get back. But if you're going from crisis to crisis to crisis to enrollment crisis to actual crisis to all these, I mean, you're constantly heightened and you're going to run out. It happens with principals. It happens with teachers. It happens hardcore with school PR folks. That's why we're seeing some of our favorite folks that have been around for the longest saying, you know what, I was going to do this for 10 more years, but I think I'm at retirement age. I think I want to go be a grandparent, or I want to be a dad. So yeah, burnout's huge. I do think that I told Becca, our co-host, I said, we're just going to have to do like a series on burnout at some point. So maybe that's early next season as we are wrapping up season 5. You talked a little bit about, as one of your takeaways is help your superintendent build storytelling systems. What do you mean there? What takeaway school PR people, as they're having these end of year conversations and planning for next year, how can they start embedding that seed of storytelling with their superintendent?
You know, one of my takeaways here, you know, given that 47% of school PR people are doing this by themselves, there's no way you can do it alone.
Right.
No one person can tell an entire district story. And so summer, you know, we joked about summer, you know, being like downtime, and it's totally not. But summer is a good time to sort of reassess how you're receiving, you know, the stories, the beautiful, you know, moments, the pictures from the school level to your position. maybe this is something that, like, I know Saginaw ISD has this, you know, thing called collective authorship, where they have, you know, their teachers voluntarily take modules about how to, you know, write social media captions and things like that and send those to the communications team. Maybe this is a Google form. Maybe this is deciding that since principals are so busy, you need a communications point of contact at the school that isn't a principal, but, you know, is trained on how to, you know, continually keep your office fed with, like, all of the things happening in their schools. I think that, you know, this can look different depending on the size of your district and the relationship that the communications professional has with the principals or has at the building levels, but it needs to be figured out.
Right.
And it starts with building mutual respect between the building level and between the school communicators. And that is definitely something that a conversation a superintendent can start. You know, if the principals don't know what the communicators do, or if, you know, the teachers have never met or never even seen a training with the communications director, then, you know, that trust is already, like, off, not to a rocky start, but off to a difficult start.
Right.
And so, you know, as you're planning next year's PD for teachers, like, is there an opportunity to let them know what the strategic plan is and what the goals for school communication are, like how you try to communicate around values? In previous research that I've done for School CO, most teachers already consider it part of their job to, you know, make the districts look good. And so, you know, it's the communication professional's role to be able to help them do that and coach them on that. And maybe that looks like a training. Maybe it's more informal like that. One of my favorite communication instructors, Ben Booth in Kansas, he sends out, like, weekly communications tips. Sometimes the tips are, this is what your email signature should look like. This is what we want. And sometimes the tips are, like, you know, how to make sure you're taking photos of everybody.
Right.
Or, you know, summer is a good time to think about how to get ahead on that, because the reality is you can't do it by yourself. And your superintendent can help you facilitate those systems, because, as you've said, you know, communications professionals are full-blown marketing right now. It's, you know, more important than ever that schools are able to tell their stories. And as the communications director or the communications professional, you are the head coach. You are the most experienced at this. And the district should, you know, both leverage your experience and also increase your impact, multiply your impact, you know, by creating those systems that you can work within.
That's all. Yeah, that's awesome. We just started working with the client, and I asked him straight up, Ms. Superintendent, how are you getting information? How's your communications director? How are they getting communications and stories? And, you know, I've heard the Google forms, I've heard ambassadors on campus that text the person. And this was the first time that I had heard a superintendent go, I set up a Slack channel just for our principals and they submit photos. And I was like, okay, I want to unpack that a little bit. Is it working? Mm-hmm. Because my experience is the Google form with principals are super busy. I get it. She goes, you'd be amazed. By having that one little thing on their phone where they can be in the classroom, take the picture, science class, doing an experiment about color change in elements, boom, sent off. And as we were learning and assisting them, she added me to this Slack channel so I could start helping them pull content. It's amazing. There's 5 to 10 posts a day. So, I mean, you're giving, the story's being told without, you know, I'm in Texas, this is up in Chicago, I'm telling their story from Texas. So there's creative ways. And again, summer is a great time to unpack that and figure out, hey, what do we want to try? If it fails, what's our second shot? Because the first time may not work. In some districts, we've implemented the Google form thing. It just didn't take off. Mm-hmm. So the way it took off was, okay, if you take a picture on your phone, just text it to me. So we always end every show with the same question. And we ask, if it's your first time on the show, you get asked this if you come back on the show again, which if you have more research to share, I love conversations like this. The first time we have you on the show, we always ask you to talk about a teacher, administrator, a coach, someone in your life in the education journey that had an impact on you that's kind of helped you land where you've landed today. So who's that person for you?
So I'm thinking about Miss Briscoe. I had a lot of great teachers. I was very, very fortunate. I went to Texarkana, Arkansas School District on the Arkansas side of Texarkana. But Miss Briscoe, I had the immense luck to get to be in her very last fifth grade class. And what that meant is that she had her husband, who had been a career photography teacher, co-teach with her for a year. And they simply gave us the most enriching experience. It was one of those classes where even as a little fifth grader, like I felt so lucky to be there. And I see the curiosity that she sparked in me, carry me well into parenthood. We went on a fossil hunt. I took my daughter looking for fossils this weekend at Buffalo River. And I still have like little nuggets of information. I think like teachers have such a powerful ability to not just set you up for like the future or, you know, your career or anything like that. But, you know, thanks, Ms. Briscoe. You've made me a better mom. You know, I get to inspire a wonder of the natural world with my, you know, wonderful little girl. And I'm grateful.
Well, that's awesome. That's a great story. Well, I don't know if you know this or not, but you're our last show of the season. We are wrapping up. Our next show is our recap show. So we'll be recapping everything we talked about this season. And Becca will be on. It'll be me and Becca. It's her first year co-hosting. So she's pumped to recap her first year in podcasting. But we always like to have one show a season that just feels very inspirational towards the school PR people. We try to do that in every episode, but whether it's a keynote that we heard at a conference or something to that effect. This season, we've had a few people really speak into school PR people and build them up. But I think that this is a great episode to end the season on because we're all about data. As school PR folks, we need to be all about data. And the data that you've presented in this and you've talked with me about today is a encouraging set of data. It shows school PR folks that you're doing important work. You're seen, you're heard. There are ways to be better. All of us know that we can be better at our job every day. It's our tagline that we end every show with. But I just want to say thank you for doing this research because it really does. It's an inspirational set of data that helps not only school PR folks feel better about the work they're doing, but it gives them, like I said earlier, a backbone and a set of data to advocate for themselves. And that's the biggest thing we can do right now is to continue to advocate for school PR and school communicators because they have important work, they have a hard job, and a lot of us are doing it by ourselves. And this data is inspiring and helpful. So thank you for doing this. Thank you for coming on and chatting with me today and just being so good at what you did here.
Well, thanks for having me. And to the school communicators, thank you for doing your work. Thank you for being incredible survey takers. This won't be our last time we focus on school communicators. I know that.
Awesome. Well, have a great day and have another fossil hunt and enjoy your time with your kiddo and happy birthday. I know you said earlier birthday's coming up. So happy birthday and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thank you.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of School PR Happy Hour. I want to thank Brittany for coming on and talking so passionately about the research that you can tell she just loved doing. And I just want to again say to the school communicators that are listening, you're seen, you're heard, your work is important, and continue to do what you do every day because you're making an impact in the life of students. Well, as we begin to wrap up the school year and wrap up this season of School PR Happy Hour, I want to say thank you for being along for the ride this year. I want to thank our sponsors, Class Intercom and CISO Communications, for the support, and I look forward to seeing each and every one of our listeners in Seattle at the INSPER seminar in just a few short weeks. If you're there, find me and Becca, let's grab a drink, and let's talk, and let's just hang out and decompress a little bit. Next episode will be our recap episode, where we'll get together, just me and Becca, and talk about the year, talk about our favorite guest, and we'll check and see how Becca liked podcasting her first season. Until next time, keep doing what you're doing, it's important, and let's go out there and try to be a little better at our jobs every day.